96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. On this Medical Monday, we don't have to tell you that this is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. You see the pink accessories worn by the NFL players and, of course, pink awareness bows all over social media. Well, education is just as important as awareness. And tonight we're sharing information and answering your questions. My guests are Dr. Estelle Cook-Sampson. She is a radiologist at Howard University Hospital. Also, Mema Carmo. She's a breast cancer survivor and founder and CEO of the Tiger Lily Foundation. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. Yes. So let me go to you, Dr. Sampson, first. What's new when it comes to breast cancer? It seems every year there's always new information out, whether it has to do with medications, treatments, even exams.
Harold, thank you so much for asking that question. First of all, it isn't so much what's new, but let's talk about what's on the horizon, such as the dense breast concept.
What is that, dense breast concept?
Yes.
What does that mean?
That is many states, approximately 31 states, have notification by state laws require that individuals be notified regarding their breast density.
Now, why is the density of the breast an issue?
This may become an issue in terms of the more dense your breast, the more difficult it may be for the radiologist to be able to evaluate for a lesion.
Okay. Okay. So you're talking about when you go for a mammogram.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And we now have tomosynthesis, which is another type of mammogram, basically a mammogram in which many, many images are taken of the breast to help us look through the breast a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But dense breasts may result in a more difficult challenge for the radiologist to pick up a lesion, and perhaps you may have slightly increased incidence of breast cancer.
Mm-hmm. But the density of the breast is not necessarily a bad thing. Isn't that more about how you were born? Isn't that about your family history?
It could be. Uh-huh. Generally, as one gets older, the breasts become less dense.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't necessarily a bad thing. It is, as you stated, it is who you are, what you are. That's your body makeup.
Mm-hmm. When should a woman have a mammogram? There's been so much information. I seem to remember, a couple of years ago that women were supposed to have a mammogram, say once a year. There was a recent study that said that they are they're not either as accurate or as needed. And it is so confusing, and particularly in communities, specifically the Black community, where cost may be an issue, access may be an issue. And I can't imagine, as a woman saying, well, what am I supposed to do?
Absolutely. First of all, in determining when you should have a mammogram, that is a discussion that an individual should have with his or health care provider. Now, you notice I mentioned his because we must keep in mind that 1% of all breast cancers occur in males. When we get a mammogram or evaluation of the breast, it isn't just for cancer. It can pick up other types of lesions as well, particularly axillary lymph nodes or supraclavicular lymph nodes.
No, whoa, a super what? No.
Clavicular.
Now,
that's
that
over
mean?
The collarbone.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Over the collarbone, under the collarbone, or even evaluation of the neck. But the mammogram, as you mentioned, would serve to evaluate the breast.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mema, I appreciate you, you know, participating in this conversation. You are a survivor, and certainly we wish you, you know, the best of health. How long have you been in remission?
I've been in remission for about 11 years now. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk to the dense breast question because, you know, younger women tend to have denser breast tissue. And so when you bring up the issue of getting screened, oftentimes, you know, screening misses denser breasts, misses tumors in denser breasts, like it did for me. So my mother is an amazing woman. She taught me to do my breast exams at 13. And so I've been doing them for 18 years, and I found a lump in my breast, went to my doctor, asked for screening. I had to push because he said I was too young. At the time, I was 32 years old. And so if I hadn't pushed to get screening, I would be dead today. So there's two things that are important to me is getting women who are younger to understand their bodies, to be their own best advocate, and to know their family history, which is very important because if I hadn't pushed, like I said, I wouldn't be alive today. And so screening is a very personal issue. You know, like you just heard, you have to know your body, and when a lump appears and you're not comfortable, whether it's not always a lump. It could be dimpling, a rash. It could be a puckering. It could be something that's just, you know, abnormal for you. Mm-hmm. But women should always speak up if you find something that's not normal.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about breast cancer and what you should know. Of course, this is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Now, Mema, talk to me about your story, because your story is not just about the breast health. It is an all-encompassing situation involving, you know, your family and the process, the difficult process. Talk to me briefly about that.
Well, like I said, I'm from Liberia, West Africa. My mom's a nurse, and she got me doing my breast exams early. So I think the important thing, like I said, is to know your body and be your best advocate. When I found the lump, it took them a long time to take me seriously. And finally, I got diagnosed. And it was really challenging to be able to have to make decisions about my life within a matter of weeks.
What do you mean by that?
Decisions about, you know, do I have a lumpectomy or a mastectomy? You know, do I have chemotherapy? How aggressive? You know, do I have radiation? What do those things mean for my body long term? Because these things affect your body long term. Your entire life is going to be affected whether or not you survive the disease. Mm-hmm. And so at 31 years old, most women are not aware of what it means to go through breast cancer treatment. And I was a single mom. You know, I actually was preparing to get married, but my fiance was scared. And some men, you know, have a hard time dealing with this. And so our relationship ended. And so I became a single mom overnight. I have a 3-year-old daughter, and I had to figure out how to deal with my body changing, my life, you know, literally looking at my life. Am I going to live or not? And how do I care for a child and talk to her about this? So there are all these issues. The first issue was learning all this information really quickly and making important decisions for my health. The second was, how do I survive this disease? And if I do, how do I make a difference for other women who are younger? And then third is my child. You know, what do you tell a child that's 3 years old about your diagnosis? How do you talk to her about that? And so I told my daughter at 3, explained to her in loving terms that I had a boo-boo and that it bothered me, had to get it fixed, and I might lose my hair. But I said to her, whatever happens, I'm going to tell you the truth. I'll be with you the entire time, and we're going to get through this. And I encourage people to always look at a challenge as a gift. No matter what happens and what happened to me, I always ask myself, how can somebody else learn from what I've been through? How can I empower the next person?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was going through chemotherapy, I had my second treatment, and I asked God, you know, I said, I don't know what is in store for me, but I know that this is something that is a life changer. How can I serve you and other people? And the answer was my nonprofit organization, which I started in treatment. That's now 11 years old. serving young women with breast cancer nationwide.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about breast cancer, information that you need to know. If you have a question or a comment, lines are open, and we will be taking your questions, of course, even after 7:30 on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I wanted to ask Dr. Sampson, take me through the mammography process. When someone comes into the office, what should they expect, and what is it that doctors are looking for?
Harold, usually the patient would enter with a prescription or directions for either a diagnostic or a screening mammogram. Mm-hmm. A diagnostic mammogram will be that when a patient has a sign or symptom, perhaps they feel the palpable lump or mass, skin puckering, as it was mentioned before, nipple discharge. There could be various reasons. And with that, we will evaluate the entire breast and focus in on the area of concern and perhaps get an ultrasound or other diagnostic imaging. If they come in for a screening, basically they will get four images. That will be the medial lateral and the craniocaudal projection of each breast.
Okay, now what does that mean?
Well, that means getting a view that will flatten the breast so that we will see it in all directions. And the medial lateral will be, if you can just imagine, parallel to your pectoralis muscle. Which is the muscle that, you know, you like to pump up.
Oh, you mean the
chest wall?
Yes, okay. The chest muscle.
Yes.
Okay.
What's going on here?
Yes. Okay, go right ahead, Doc.
There is compression, and it's a little uncomfortable. However, the technologists are very skilled at working with the patients in regard to how much pressure should be exerted. Mm-hmm. The pressure is needed to prevent motion. Okay. So after one gets a screening mammogram, if an abnormality is picked up, keep in mind, most of the time, it is not cancer. The patient will be asked to come back, and then we'll do a diagnostic mammogram. Diagnostic mammogram, it could be 32 different types of views, potentially, that one would get, including an ultrasound evaluation.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about breast cancer. If you have a question, if you have a comment about breast cancer, whether it be self-exam, whether it be a mammogram, whether it be treatment or even support, lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go to a break, there is a breast cancer brunch. Howard University's Cancer Center is hosting that. It's on October 15th. It's at Howard University Hospital, and it honors the late Rosemary Williams, advocate for equal access to quality health care for underserved women. So again, that's on October 15th. Is there more information as to, you know, how you can attend? Is this open to the public, doctor?
It certainly is open to the public. There is a cost associated. One can call the Cancer Center and ask to speak to someone regarding this Sunday brunch. It's actually in honor of the breast cancer survivors and to honor those individuals who helped to support the Cancer Center.
Okay. And what's the phone number?
The phone number is area code 202-865-6100.
And as always, we'll be posting that information on our website on WHUR.com. Again, that's the Howard University Cancer Center's brunch on October 15th, the annual Rosemary Williams brunch, breast cancer brunch. So certainly that'll be on Sunday, and you would you're invited to attend. Again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. 0. We're coming up on our break, but I want to let our listeners know we've got Vanessa calling from Prince George's County. We have Tammy calling from Upper Marlboro. We're going to talk to her as well. And also, we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Estelle Cook-Sampson, radiologist at Howard University Hospital, and Mae McCarmo, breast cancer survivor and founder and CEO of the Tiger Lily Foundation. Your phone calls are coming up next. Do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation and your phone calls in just a few seconds. To the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're sharing information and answering your questions about breast cancer on this Medical Monday. Of course, this is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and my guests are Dr. Estelle Cook-Sampson. She's a radiologist at Howard University Hospital, and Mae McCarmo. She is a breast cancer survivor, 11 years, and founder and CEO of the Tiger Lily Foundation. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tammy calling from Upper Marlboro. Tammy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm a 10-year survivor of breast cancer.
Good for you.
And the one thing the doctor was talking about was when you get your mammogram, the compression that they do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had mine done. And they saw something on the film, but when they compressed it, it disappeared. And they went on to tell me that it was okay, but a year later, I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Hmm. Talk to me.
I was upset, you know, that it happened, that it was there all along until a lump had formed.
Dr. Sampson, talk to me about that. One of the things that you mentioned earlier was the various views. That's Tammy we're talking to. We were talking about the various views during the mammogram process. What is she speaking about?
Tammy, I'm so sorry to hear about this experience that you had, but this shows you that no one examination is absolutely foul-proof. This is why we use a combination. And unfortunately, you had to experience something that was, you know, just not very good for you or for your family. One of the things that we have to remember, when an individual develops breast cancer, is diagnosed with breast cancer, we had, Mamie speaking about her personal experiences as a young person, but someone who might be in later years would have not only their children to take care of, they may be taking care of their parents, and usually we don't like to see the woman become ill because it has a negative impact for the entire family and consequently the entire community as well. But anyway, going back to what Tammy was saying, this can happen. And what we generally tend to do as radiologists, we would ask the patient if we suspect something else, that perhaps to get an ultrasound or even an MRI, or perhaps to come back within 6 months.
Okay. Tammy, thank you so much for sharing with us, and continue good health to you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mia calling from Forestville. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, this is Mia Braxton.
Hi, how are you?
I am wonderful. I was calling to let you know I am a 7-year breast cancer survivor. I found my lump during my breast exam, so it's not just important to have your mammogram. You need to know your body, and you need to do your breast exam. That's very important.
Yes,
I used to do mine twice a month because my breasts were so dense. So I did in the beginning of the month and in the middle of the month, and I was always told if I feel something in the left breast, it should be symmetrical, and it also should be in the right breast. Not saying that it's cancer, but you need to have it checked.
Okay.
When I didn't feel it in the right breast, I got out the shower, and I had my husband feel it, and he's like, that don't feel right. So I went to work the next day, and I work in fertility, so I had the doctor check it, and she had me do an emergency mammogram. It turns out to be cancer. It was a two-centimeter cyst that turned into a six-centimeter cyst within 3 weeks of me being in surgery. I'm 7 years out. My receptors were triple negative, which is very hard to treat, but I'm doing good.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I appreciate you sharing your experience, and I'm so glad that you're here to share that experience with us. Thank you so much, Mia, for giving
Thank
us a
you.
Call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Vanessa, calling from Prince George's County. Thanks for calling, Vanessa. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon.
Hey, how are
Hi.
You?
I'm very young. And like the young lady said before,
how old are you?
I'm 30.
You're 30. Okay, go right ahead.
Yes. My first experience was when I was 18. I found a cyst in my right breast. I went to get an ultrasound done. They said they're not sure if it's cancerous or not. They did do a biopsy of it. And they also told me that it can get to a size of a grapefruit if I, you know, decide to not get it removed. But they still haven't did a clear study on if it was cancerous later on, say 10 years from now. I did get it removed, and I was 18 at the time when I had found this out. And a few years after, I had another situation similar. I had some blisters on my left breast that came about, and I didn't know what that was from. I went to go get an MRI, a mammogram and an ultrasound. They did confirm that I had another cyst on the left breast.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that it doesn't seem to be cancerous or anything, but they told me to pretty much keep an eye on it. And they also said that for the cyst, it can disappear on its own, and sometimes it'll get bigger.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it's good to know your body. Even the smallest things count. If you have a bump on your breast, it can be, a pimple look like, still get, checked. Because these are small indications that something is going on.
Wow. Wow. Thank you so much, Vanessa, for sharing that with us. Dr. Yu had something you wanted to share.
Yes. Vanessa, I think you and Mayor are both saying something very important, and that is the self-breast examination is critical to evaluate your body. You have to know your body, and you have to know mm-hmm. when something is not right and to go ahead and pursue. And as you mentioned, many people are afraid of having a lump, but most of them are not going to be cancer. It's going to be a cyst, or it could be a benign tumor.
Mm, okay. Vanessa, thank you for your phone call and continued good health to you. Sabrina calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Sabrina, are you there?
I am. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
I'm actually 48 now. I've mm-hmm. had four biopsies done on both breasts from lumps that were found that I found. They all came back benign, but I also have to take a mammogram every 6 months now. And they told me the last one that I did that my tissues were so, there was not much tissue left. And I just kind of want to know, what are my probabilities of being a candidate for breast cancer?
Sabrina?
Yes.
Okay, this is Dr. Estelle Cook-Samson, a radiologist. This is something that you should discuss with your medical provider, because
okay.
they would have to look at your family history, and that mm-hmm. is on both sides, your father and your mother's side, not just your mother's side.
Okay.
Your father and your mother's side. And you might be a candidate for genetic testing. And a lot has to do with what the tissue biopsies were. So one would have to look at the pathology reports. And it's not uncommon that When one has an abnormality such as certain types of tumors, fibroadenomas, that you will be followed every 6 months or at least once a year to make certain that it is not growing.
Okay.
Well, Sabrina, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about breast cancer, what you need to know. Mema, after you were first diagnosed, take us through the process of treatment. What did you do and to get through the cancer?
Well, first, thanks for asking. First, I would say I was scared out of my mind. Mm-hmm. You know, there was that shock where you're just numb, and I didn't go to sleep. I didn't sleep for almost 48 hours. I couldn't function. I couldn't think because, you know, you hear if you eat healthy and exercise and you have no family history and all that, you think that, and you're too young, you think that you don't fit the profile. But there is no profile for breast cancer. And so my shock was that I'd done, you know, all the right things. I ate healthy, exercised, didn't smoke, you know, and then there here I was at 32 years old with this diagnosis. And I had done the right things. And so I had to learn really fast, you know, what to do. Do I have, you know, surgery and what kind? And I am triple negative, which is very aggressive, and there's no treatment that targets that type of breast cancer. So I had to figure out, do I have mastectomy or do I just do a lumpectomy? I did a lumpectomy. And then I had 8 rounds of chemotherapy, which was very aggressive.
And what does, when for those who aren't familiar, you know, you said 8 rounds of chemotherapy. What does that mean exactly?
Well, yeah. So you know what? It's a whole other cancer, like a dictionary, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn the dictionary because there's more than one type of breast cancer and there's more than one type of chemotherapy. And so the kinds I had were called AC, Adriamycin Cytoxin, and then I had another one called Taxol. And, you know, it was just scary because when I was getting, so the surgery was difficult, you know, and scary, but the treatment was worse for me because you never imagine having to know what chemotherapy tastes like
mm-hmm.
or smells like, you know? And you walk in the room and there's all these chairs lined up. It's very assembly line looking. And you sit down and you might look in a mirror and look at yourself and say, I am not what cancer looks like. This cannot be happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then the doctor comes in or the nurse and they give you the chemo drug. And, you know, at first I was in denial. I was like, I'm not going to lose my hair. I'm not going to be depressed. I'm going to be strong. I'm going to be a fighter. But there had to be a time for grieving my life as I knew it. For grieving my body changing. I had to grieve my relationship falling apart. There were some friends who didn't understand my journey. I mean, my whole life changed, my idea of what my life would look like. And so, but it became apparently very clear very soon, you know, what was important to me. And that's why I said earlier, cancer changed my life for the better in the sense that I realized that I couldn't waste any time, whether I lived 6 months or a year or 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I looked for other girls who were going through treatment like me, and there were not any people I could find who were under 50 or under 45. And, you know, everyone's journey is different, but when you're younger, it's a unique journey. You want people that understand where you are and what you're dealing with, things like, you know, your body image, sexuality, not having a partner, having a young child to raise, you know, and if you live and survive the disease, which many people do, what does it look like, you know, when you get back in the world of, you know, what's important to you and how do you deal with the fear of recurrence and having your scans every year and being happy you're alive, but being depressed and scared about your future because you don't know what that holds.
You said you had a lumpectomy.
I had a lumpectomy. Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I had a lumpectomy and then I had the chemotherapy and then I had radiation for, I think it was 6 weeks every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Doctor, talk to me a little bit about the difference between a lumpectomy and a mastectomy, radical mastectomy. We've heard these terms been bandied about for quite some time.
Lumpectomy is when you just resect a tumor itself and a little bit of around surrounding tissue, but very minimum. I don't want to minimize it, but it's just critical. In other words, the entire breast is not removed.
Okay.
And this is a discussion that you would have with that breast surgeon, because it will depend on many, many things, such as the type, as Mimi has mentioned before. It depends on the size of the tumor, the size of your breast, perhaps your age, the cosmetic effects it would cause, and your risk factors, the other risk factors that would enter the picture in the decision-making. But studies have shown, in general, for most tumors, the lumpectomy is just as effective as the mastectomy. Now, the so-called radical mastectomy, that's kind of like what we used to know in the 70s and 80s. That's when they would go in, and that is not used as often now. It's not a need for
But it is. What is it?
Is well, basically, it's removing quite a bit, the breast tissue, even some of the muscle, removing the lymph nodes. Although we still do, you know, lymph nodes can be resected at the time, even with the lumpectomy, could be.
I see. I need to take a break. And when we come back, more of this conversation about breast cancer, what you need to know. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about breast cancer on this Medical Monday. Of course, this is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I'm here with Dr. Estelle Cook-Sampson, a radiologist at Howard University Hospital, and Mema Carmo, breast cancer survivor and founder and CEO of the Tiger Lily Foundation. Mema, talk to me about the end of your treatment. You know, how are you feeling? Did you have any additional surgery? You had a lumpectomy. Did you have to have any reconstructive surgery, or were you able to avoid that? Talk to me about that. Mema, can you hear me? Mema, can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Okay, did you hear my question?
Yes, I did. Sorry about that.
That's quite all right.
I was saying, so yeah, I had a lumpectomy, so I only had a portion. I had a tumor taken out. I didn't have to have reconstruction. But what I did do was I changed my lifestyle radically.
How so?
I mean, because I couldn't control what happened getting breast cancer, but I can control my body's environment, what I put in it, what I put on it, and what's around it in my lifestyle. So I change my diet. I eat a very clean diet. I exercise every day. I run. I do weights. I do a lot of detoxing to keep my body clean. I eat a lot of healthy foods, a lot of greens to keep my body alkaline. Cancer thrives in an environment where there's, you know, acid, sugar, mucus. So certain foods have more mucus, like milk and dairy products. Meats are not the best, you know, for you to eat as well. So I do a lot of green juicing. I run. I have a very holistic lifestyle. One thing I didn't anticipate was that I would be afraid when treatment ended, because you're getting treated to cure your cancer. So you're thinking, I just want to get done. I just want to get done. I just want to get done. I want to get there. And then you have all these people around you, treating you, taking care of you, nurturing you. And then the last day you're done, and then, and you're happy, but then you leave and you go back home. And the fear set in for me of, if I'm not fighting the cancer, will they come back again? And so that's something a lot of women go through that's not talked about enough. And they feel ashamed to say that they're afraid when treatment's over. But it's a real issue among women that do go through depression or fear. And so to me, it's really important to find other women like myself who were young, who were wanting support. And that's kind of why I began my nonprofit organization, to give women that voice and that sisterhood and that tribe to support them, you know, during and after breast cancer.
What does that support look like from the perspective of the Tiger Lily Foundation?
Our work at Tiger Lily is so multifaceted. So one of the things that's really important to me is God and in spirituality. And you don't often see that infused in cancer care, you know, but whatever your religion is, the first thing you say when you're scared is, oh my God. You need to have that God, whatever you call it, behind you, because that's faith, and that is what gets you through anything. And so it was really important to me to infuse education for young girls to understand how to do breast examinations and why they're important. It was important to take the fear out of things, because being an educated advocate is more important than being fearful and not knowing, right, and not going for your testing and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so our programs are, you know, we have about 14 programs. They're providing peer support, hope bags with blankets and scarves and lotions and soaps. We do text alerts. We do monthly video chats with survivors. A lot of women we're getting in are younger and they're metastatic. So we offer metastatic breast cancer Twitter chats and podcasts and sharing stories. We do lobbying on the Hill as well. So all our work is about giving these women who are scared love and nurturing and empowerment and a sense of fear that overcomes their, of faith rather, of faith, to overcome their fear and their, you know, being sad going through breast cancer.
You said metastatic. What is that?
Metastatic is when the breast, the tumor or the cells have spread beyond the breast.
Okay.
And it's gone into the body to other organs. And so if it's contained, it would be in the breast and the lump can be taken out via, you know, lumpectomy or a mastectomy. But when it's spread, it's metastatic and it may be gone to the brain or the other breast or, you know, liver or other organ, spine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that means, yes.
You said that you have been cancer-free for 11 years. How old is your daughter now?
My little wonderful angel is 14 years old.
So and now that she's 14, you know, she's... You know, she's a juvenile, but literally, you know, sitting at the...
No, not really.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we can have the parenting conversation another time, too.
Right.
I have a 19-year-old. But she really is... She's sitting at the precipice of womanhood. And considering what you've gone through, what kind of conversations are you having with, you know, the 14-year-old going on 30? You know, what are you saying?
Exactly.
What are you saying to her about your journey?
Well, there are two things. I don't just talk about it. I am about it. My life is about survivorship. And so since she was 3 years old, people would be calling me and texting and reaching out, you know, as late as 8, 9, 10 at night via text or email. I took her to all the events I went to. You know, she'd be the only baby at a breast cancer conference, you know. We get on planes together to travel. She helped me write my speeches. She's with me when my friends are, you know, getting through breast cancer, when they're dying, when they're sick or metastatic. Like, she's with me all the time. She's been there the entire time. And so, you know, if you want to raise a young woman to be educated and be strong and be empowered, you can't hide from her.
Mm-hmm.
So my daughter has never been, I've never not told her what's going on with me or the woman we're helping. And what that inspired in her is that she wanted to give back as well. And she has her own event every year called Pajama Glam Party to get other girls her age talking about breast health awareness with their moms and their friends and sisters. Mm-hmm. And so she's always been involved. And she actually has, her event has actually been our biggest event the past 3.5-4 years because it's about conversation with mom and daughters talking about breast health in a fun, empowered way to encourage them to be able to know their body, speak up for their best breast health, and to be their own best advocate.
Dr. Cook-Sampson, one of the things that has been really difficult for families is discussing this issue with family members who absolutely need to know. And you mentioned, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, you were talking about, you know, surgery. But there's also a social aspect, a familial aspect. How do you get patients to sit down and just be really transparent with husbands, sons and daughters and other potential caretakers?
Yes. You know, what Maymay is saying is very true. It starts with the mother speaking to the children. And it starts with that one member of the family asking and demanding to find out. It isn't just breast cancer. It could be ovarian cancers. It can be any types of cancers because they may be related. And I can remember years ago, people would not even speak the word cancer. They would just say the big C, you know. It was very secretive about it. And I think it starts with a conversation. And organizations such as the Tiger Lily Foundation, there are many other organizations that are encouraging people to speak about their breast care. It isn't just cancer, but the breast care issue. And to act on something, you have to be educated. And I just think that the conversation has to start somewhere. And one thing, the people of color we are such an admixture group. We have so many genetic input, and it's very difficult. So it's very important for us to have discussions within our families and to be frank about who passed away with what or who's surviving with what. It is very important.
I've got about 2 minutes left. Real quick, Maima, talk to me about those conversations and how, you know, women and certainly even men who may be diagnosed with breast cancer need to let family members know what's going on.
Well, I think it becomes easier when you don't couch it with fear. I mean, and I know it's a hard thing to think about, but, you know, I sat my daughter down and I just said to her, like I told you, you know, mommy has a boo-boo and we're going to work on fixing it. I told my friends, like, you know, got them together. I actually threw a party and I told them to come over. And I told them I have breast cancer, but we're going to be positive. We're going to get through this together. And then, you know, with men, it's a little bit harder because men are so strong, but men are very sensitive as well. And when a woman they love has breast cancer, it's hard for them to sometimes to deal with that. So it's important to sit down and have conversation and ask them how they're feeling. Ask them if they're afraid. You know, ask them what's on their mind. So that's during breast cancer, but I'd say before, make the conversation casual and make it often. Don't wait till someone's sick to have a conversation about breast cancer. You know, talk about it maybe going to church or in the car or over dinner. And so I tell parents to have that chat, you know, just have it like you have it about, you know, if you're going to get your hair done, talk about your treating your child's hair or brushing their teeth or taking a shower. Make breast health discussion a part of their lifestyle. So it's not a, you know, it's not a taboo topic.
Okay. I think that's a great way to end this conversation. I want to thank both of you, Dr. Estelle Cook-Sampson and Maima Carmo. Thank you for sharing with us. If you want more information about the Tiger Lily Foundation, you can find it online at tigerlilyfoundation.org. And as always, the resources and information mentioned in this program will be posted online on WHUR.com. Again, thank you both so much for sharing with us.
Thank you so much, Harold.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me on.
Yes. Sure thing.
Thank you so much.
That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM, Channel 141 for this Monday, October 9th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow us and tweet us by using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.